Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling unto all people round about, when they shall be in siege both against Judah and against Jerusalem. But the days of Zechariah warned of upon us. Join Stephen Bannoun and host Bonnie Harvey for a discussion of Jerusalem, the Flashpoint.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Flashpoint, where we'll be the spark that ignites the world. Sorry we didn't get an edition out last week. Stephen was the kids were in the hospital. They're taking turns getting sick there. I haven't been sick here, but, my son-in-law was next to being hospitalized, having pneumonia with this flu stuff and diagnosed with flu. And almost hospitalized, so we had our daughter and the kids here taking refuge from all the germs in their own house. So anyway, we're doing the best we can do. Thank you for bearing with us. Welcome to the show, Stephen.
thank you, Bonnie. Yeah, it is. From what the doctors were saying on this end here, it's a very late virus, an unusual one. Bacterial. I know the kids here ran 103 as far as temperature.
Wow. Is everybody out of the hospital now?
Yeah, they're back home. They each one took their turn there. Yeah. And, we're trying to avoid the adult side from getting it. But it looks like my father-in-law has caught it now as well. And the best way we found as far as the kids help pull them out is the doctor went with a injection of antibiotic rather than oral, because they were also not able to keep anything down in their stomach either. So
terrible. Well, I don't know who gets a flu shot out there. It would be interesting if the CDC kept records of who gets sick and whether or not they were inoculated. But I have a feeling that the flu shot is spreading the flu. And if you get it, it's making it worse.
Well, there's some truth to that, Bonnie, and I'll tell you why. Because when you inject a live virus into the people, then those people, as they sweat, that virus also comes out and becomes airborne. So they can be the ones that are actually contributing to this. And of course, Agenda 21 is what I smell when I hear, when I think of these things. This is what we're really dealing with. And people are not, they don't realize just how serious depopulation agenda is, and to what extent they'll go to not to say that people are going to pass away necessarily from this type of a flu virus, but the elderly could.
Of the flu shot. So then they say, it works, but they have nothing to back it up. So, if I have read before, if you get five flu shots in a row, you have just doubled your risk of getting Alzheimer's because of the heavy metals in there. So, my son-in-law got the flu shot, and he is almost hospitalized. He still feels like horrible. Yeah, he's being isolated. Fortunately, they have a big house, so I just pray the kids don't get it, because it's one thing to be a full-blown adult and fighting, but it's another thing to be, a 30-pound three-year-old and trying to fight. So anyway, prayers for everyone out there that has the flu, and please don't get the flu shot. Okay, let's get off of this and let's go to Syria. Stephen, what's happening in Syria?
Well, Syria is a very unique situation right now. We know that President Trump is pulling troops out of Syria. And at the same time, he has also said that, and he's changed this number on a regular basis. First, he was only going to keep 200 U.S. forces in Syria. Now it's 400 he's keeping in Syria, 200 of those of which will be at the base called Al-Tanf. And there was at one point they had agreed with Russia and Syria to remove their troops from there. But that's kind of the blockade from Syria crossing the Euphrates and getting control of their oil fields once again, which is still under U.S. control. And, of course, that's all being pumped out by the alleged Free Syrian Army, which is neither Syrian. I guess the oil's free. Maybe you could look at it that way. But at any rate, Russia sent down just the other day a convoy of buses under military escort. Now, U.S. mainstream media is going to tell you that the U.S. Administration is saying that there was no Russian military escort. Well, I've got the video footage. I shared it on Israeli News Live. It is a military escort of these buses, and they were going to the Ruskin refugee camp where the Syrians that have been displaced by the war and the fighting in the country there, they were going there to begin evacuation process from that region. The U.S. blocked that. I just got that this morning. The U.S. has blocked this evacuation process of this refugee camp, which is just a massive refugee camp. Just tents as far as the eye can see are there for the refugee people there of Syria. And they were blocked by the U.S. military. And the U.S. military would not allow anyone to leave at all of this camp. And
the buses being sent to evacuate the camp, that was being sent by whom? By Russia?
Yes, that was being sent by the Russian. Well, I should say the Syrian government is sending the buses. They're all empty. And it was escorted by the Russian military to start bringing the refugees out and repatriating them back into society as they're trying to rebuild their country. And it's being totally blocked by the United States.
And the U.S. is blocking it with a military escort?
Yes. Well, you have to understand, Russia is not sending some massive military escort. It was in the video that I show, they have one Russian military vehicle that is leading the escort, followed up by another military vehicle at the end of the bus line. And it was not, if I remember right, it's probably about 7 buses. So they can't take everybody out at one time. But what they want to do is they want to take them out of the Rukban camp and repatriate them back into society. And not to mention that the Syrian government is wanting to retake all of its land. And ISIS has a safe haven down near the Al-Tanf region there. And this is something that the U.S. is very much aware of, and they're not allowing this to happen. They're not allowing the Russians or the Syrians to remove the refugees from this camp and to repatriate them back into society, which, you know, Bonnie, this is what happened when it came to the call of the Syrian government, along with the Russian government, to repatriate back the refugees out of Europe into Syria once again. And then there was a major campaign that was published by the West saying that if you return home to Syria, they're going to punish you and put you in prisons as traitors. And that's totally false. That's totally false. The reason why they don't want the refugees to return back to the Syrian province there is because there is coming a depopulation agenda for Western Europe, and they're wanting to cause the two different sides, the Arabic and the Christian community, to fight against one another and to kill each other off. And so therefore, they needed this refugee crisis, which includes both not only Syrian, but there were even a lot of Turkish refugees that also fled, which is kind of unique because Turkey is not under a war scenario, but in Germany, we have massive numbers of Turkish refugees flying Turkish flags in Germany and a lot of these little small towns that border the Czech Republic. We've seen this for ourselves living over in that area and, of course, traveling over to Germany because it's not very far for us. So
why would the United States block the evacuation buses just to connect all these dots, Stephen?
They're doing this for two reasons. One, the Rukban camp is a good source for developing more jihadist fighters from there. They can promise them money. They can promise them food, whatever they may do in exchange for fighting and continuing this war in the region. So it is a camp that has, with such a large population of individuals there, it's a camp for jihadist fighters. And secondly, it's more or less a human shield there. You can't really go in and clean out the ISIS fighters that are living in the same region if you've got your refugee camp right in the middle of all of this. And this is something that the Russian people know as well. The Syrian people know it. And so It's being utilized by the United States, especially since they have such a low number of troops in that region, and depending more upon jihadist fighters to fight this battle. They need humans there, whether it be for human shield or whether it be for the purpose of recruiting new fighters. Because as the war drags on, we got to keep in mind, after 8 years of fighting, look at all the young children that, let's say, 8-10 years ago, they were, 8-10 years old. Now they're a fighting age as this war has raged on for 8 years. So each year there's a new number of children that have grown up that are now eligible for fighting a seemingly endless war, which, in my opinion, Bonnie, is part of this new world order that they're trying to bring about.
It always makes me feel kind of, badly when we say the U.S., but the U.S. military is the military arm of the New World Order. This is not the American people. The American people want their sons home. That's why everybody voted for Trump. This is just, it's disguised evil.
It is. And like you said, most military servicemen, and I come from a family of military people, we really believe that the fighting that has been done across the globe over the years was for freedom and democracy, and that what we appreciate and probably take for granted in the United States, freedom of religion, to be able to have freedom of speech, the right to bear arms, is something that every country should be able to have at their own disposal. And so many Americans that have fought in the military over the years have always believed that this is what we truly stand for, and that we're only fighting tyranny and dictatorships around the world. In many cases, not knowing that some of the dictators that we may be fighting against at that time were very dictators that the CIA put into position to run that nation according to their own dictates of their national security to begin with. And so it's really a travesty what we're seeing happening in Syria and Ukraine, even in France. I'm watching France, even Pakistan, which is something we should go to as well if we have time today. There is believed to be outside government involvement with the Pakistani government as far as fighting with India. I haven't researched it enough yet to know where that's going, why that's going, but I have been watching, although I haven't reported on it very much, I have watched these ongoing protests in France, and that is so much like what we saw in Ukraine, and yet France is a democratic country to begin with. And to see the type of violence with the police and the protesters and just never ending. I mean, where do the people get such a desire to protest so vehemently against their government unless there's something in the background driving these protests? And I'm just waiting for the refugees, which, by the way, if you've ever been to Paris, once you're going outside of Paris, anywhere on the outskirts of town, there are huge, huge refugee camps. These are people displaced from the Syrian war and even from Lebanon that have crossed over, ended up in France. And that's a powder keg. I mean, the protest against the French people and the French government is one thing, but you've got all these refugees there as well. That's just a powder keg waiting to explode.
And the ancient prophecy over Reuben was turbulent as the waters, or as unstable as water. And he did excel in strength. So I think there's something more to the French people than we're used to.
They are Reubenites, that are living there. And it's kind of interesting when you bring that up, because all across the globe, we have the 12 tribes.
What Davidi says. Davidi says that the French are Reuben. They were known at the get-go for their taste, for their refinement, for their culture and food, for their appreciation of the excellence in cultural matters. But they're also, the word here is unstable. So
right now, and and well organized in their the stability is probably an understatement. I would say too, Bonnie, before we leave the issue in Syria, the refugee camp, the Rukn refugee camp, according to the estimates by the United Nations and the Red Crescent, which has about an 85% of the refugees, are there's 42,000 refugees at the Rukn camp there in the Al-Tanf area. So that way people can kind of get an idea of just how many people. And of course, you got men, women, and children, but let's just say there's probably 10,000, I would say, eligible men of fighting age, probably with those statistics right there, give or take a few.
And you mentioned before we started that a lot of gold has already been taken out of Syria. Do you want to just talk about that for a second?
Yeah, that's something that just also happened. I'm glad you reminded me of that. That had kind of slipped my mind already. But there was a report that came out, and it was regarding 50 metric tons of gold that has been removed from Syria by the United States. Now, according to the article on this, and this is on the mk.ru, it is a Russian article, that speaks about this. This was reported by the Kurdish fighters that are in the region there, which is allied to the United States. So we're not talking about a group that is not pro-U.S. when it comes to the Syrian front lines there. Saying that 50 tons of gold were taken, which is an estimated worth of $1.7 billion. This was being reported also by the Sana News Agency as well, that this money was being taken. But according to the Kurdish sources that were saying it, from the Kurdish media, that the U.S. Air Force first brought in helicopters that began to remove some of this gold from this area using the Air Force helicopters. And then it was actually moved to one of the bases there in the northern part of Syria. Actually, it's called the city of Kobani. Northern Syria, where they were airlifted onto cargo or put on cargo planes and then airlifted out of the country. Now, where that gold actually went to, I can't say as far as that. But anytime we have the Kurdish news sources reporting something like this, I give that a far more credibility. I mean, Russia could report it and we could have the Syrians report it and would say, well, that's just propaganda, like what we have from the gold that was removed from Venezuela, that we see that Russia purportedly had taken out a large amount of gold out of Venezuela, as well as there was a shipment of gold sent to the United Arab Emirates also from Venezuela, which that just kind of baffles me anyway, Bonnie, you know, that I can understand maybe why they can loot the gold out of Syria or a portion of Syria's gold, because you're in a part of the country where maybe there's gold reserves that were kept. And, you know, of course, the Syrian government does not have hands on that gold. But when it comes to the gold out of Venezuela, you know, and Maduro, no doubt, is the one authorizing the movement of this gold from the country there. What are they doing it for? Obviously, you know, to make sure this doesn't get their hands on it, or that the new president, Guaido, that the U.S. has put into place, that he doesn't get his hands on it. And which I might just remind our listeners on Juan Guaido that in October of 2018, I was given a letter. I have made this letter public, but not the source of the letter, that the U.S. government would put a de facto president installed into Venezuela. And although I don't care for Maduro either, I know that he's done a lot of evil in his country. I realize that. But I think at the end of the day, what the real issue is with Venezuela is that he's infringing on the drug opportunities that are coming into the United States that help fund all these covert operations that the U.S. does around the world. And this is why the U.S. is very much trying to put a stop to Venezuela. Keeping in mind, too, when people look at Venezuela and say that Maduro has done such a bad job and is causing his people to starve to death, the United States is the one that began sanctions, I believe, back in 2009 And ever since there, every year, the sanctions have gotten more severe and more harsh. That has crippled this country from the very beginning. And now, as we have created the turmoil in this nation over a decade of punishing sanctions, like we're doing to the Russian people as well, and we do to every other government in the world that does not obey our demands, then what do you expect? The people are in desperation, much like what will be when the mark of the beast comes and you can't buy or sell. When you're starving, you'll probably take the mark because you'll see your children starving and you won't want that to happen. Well, here it is. The U.S. created the problem, and now they have this solution to the problem. Just put the president in. We want trained in America by the Jesuit system, and voila, we'll put your economy back together for you. Every bit of it, Bonnie, is a new world order.
Yep, the same old Hegelian dialect. You know, create the chaos and then come forward with the solution, quote, solution, that you want. And it's usually not in the best interest of the people. It usually benefits the globalists, the kings of the earth, and the control of the people. Do we have about 3 minutes here, Stephen. Do we want to quickly go to Ukraine, Romania?
You know what? Listen, if we can, before we go to Ukraine and Romania, because that'll be a little bit more extensive, what we probably could speak about just briefly on a three-minute note would be a little bit about Prime Minister Netanyahu. We know that he was indicted on three of the counts that he's under investigation of. And there are still more investigations that are being done. And I know a lot of people are making light of this because some of these indictments are dealing with accepting gifts like wine, stuff like that. And to me, even that is trivial. I think that when you're doing things like that, because you have to understand, I don't agree with Prime Minister Netanyahu's politics at all. But those types of indictments are trivial, and I know they're doing it for breach of trust and receiving of gifts, and there's one other one, I forget which it is, but there are far more serious crimes that are being alleged against the prime minister that have not been fully evaluated yet, which involves large, massive contracts and payoffs of submarines, I think to the German government, I believe is who it was. These are things that are far, far more serious than the little petty things that are coming up right now. But in doing so, the one thing that is a bit concerning for me when we're dealing with these indictments is that a lot of presidents in the United States, for example, they will revert to very clandestine operations on a global scale to detract away from what they're facing personally. Say, for example, Bill Clinton in the Lewinsky affair. And then the next thing you know, somebody gets bombed because he doesn't want all the media attention on him. And so I really hope that this is not what happens in the case of Netanyahu, that, you know, it is used as a pretext to go to war and to kind of divert that attention. And there is, I already know there's a lot of intelligence coming out of Israel right now that is speaking about that Israel is going to take down Hezbollah. They're going to take down Damascus and they are going to take out Iran, at least nuclear facilities in Iran. And there are some very serious issues as it is to begin with Hezbollah. So I understand Israel's concern with Hezbollah. And of course, Hezbollah gets their weapons from Iran. I just submitted intelligence to the Knesset to that very danger that Hezbollah may have received weapons that can travel at 4 kilometers per second. That's something that we don't have the ability in Israel to knock down. So it puts the Israelis in danger. And when it comes to something like this, regardless of my political views on the current administration, Likud party, I still feel the obligation to my people and their protection. So I advise the Knesset of the dangers that I have been made aware of so that they can make appropriate actions. But I don't know. Are we about out of time, Bonnie?
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. Okay, stay with us for the second half, everyone.
Oh,
Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling unto all people round about, when they shall be in siege both against Judah and against Jerusalem. Are the days of Zechariah warned of upon us? Join Stephen Bannoun and host Bonnie Harvey for a discussion of Jerusalem, the Flashpoint.
Welcome, everybody, back to the Flashpoint. Get my brain in gear here. The second half, and you know, Stephen, we're going to move to Ukraine/Romania. What's happening there?
Ukraine and Romania. This is a very interesting situation, Bonnie, because we had reported ourselves on Israeli News Live earlier that there was a very unique situation with the movement of military equipment by the Russians inside of Crimea. And this came out on February the 27th when we first reported this. And it was a convoy of armored vehicles followed by a number of personnel carriers, supply trucks by the Russian Federation inside of Crimea. But it was where it was near Sevastopol. And the video footage just seems to be endless. I mean, normally you see, you know, 6-7 of these things go by. That's not that big of a deal. But when you're seeing 20 of these armored vehicles that are also mounted with some very heavy guns on top of them traveling the streets of Sevastopol, and then Russia as well, there was another movement in southern, southwestern Russia of military equipment that it only reason it even made the news was because it had one of the armored vehicles had backed into a a private vehicle. It got stuck at a red light or something, and so it kind of made the news there. But I was noticing.
Would you explain to the listeners the importance? You highlighted that it was near Sevastopol and southern Russia. Okay, what are the ramifications of that?
Well, that's where we're headed to is all on that as well. And we're going to come back to Sevastopol after we deal with the one with Russia here, though. Because at the same time, when we're looking at the movement of military equipment in southwestern Russia, we know that, of course, you have a Ukrainian border not far away. So after I first initially saw such large amounts of military equipment being moved, which is whether it be Crimea or near Ukraine's border, not to mention Russia has a massive base on the border of Ukraine, but that's been there even far beyond before the war ever started there. That's not anything new other than it has a lot more equipment than it used to have there. So then I began to look to see what's going on in Ukraine that could be making the excitement. And my next discovery was put out by Fort Russ, and they had just done an article on March the 1st, the Ukraine loses 40 troops in fighting. Now, that's a large death toll, very large death toll to lose 40 of your fighters in battle. And in doing so, I began to look to see why, and this is no longer just normal battle. So I began to look into this, and I discovered that the Ukrainian government has really stepped up their attacks against the breakaway region, which is eastern Ukraine, Luhansk, and Donetsk, better known as the Donbas region of Ukraine, which these are mostly, Russian-type citizens. You know, let's say their families, they go back, they speak Russian, they don't speak Ukrainian. The people that live in eastern part of Ukraine, even though they are Ukrainian citizens, they're more loyal to the Ukrainian, to the Russian government, because that's what their ancestry is. And so they have been fighting for independence because during the Maidan coup, there were so many Russian speaking citizens that were targeted by the neo-Nazi pro-fascist government that was installed after Yanukovych that really brought about the murder and almost genocide of the Russian population. And this is what they feared that was going to happen in Crimea as well. One reason why Russia stepped in, because Russia also wanted to protect their military base that was in Sevastopol. So we're going to go back to that in a few moments. So I saw this large number of deaths, and then I began to also see that the Ukrainian government was beginning to use military hardware that was not part of the Minsk agreements. And of course, Minsk is over in the Belarus,
in
where
Syria?
The agreement was made several years back to try to bring about a ceasefire between Kiev, Ukraine, and that of the breakaway separatists, and to stop the fighting. And so there was a limit to only up to, I think, about 120 caliber or 120 millimeter, 22 millimeter howitzer was the biggest that could be used in the fighting whatsoever. Now they're going up to 152 millimeter. The it's actually called the Govzdika, which is far larger military equipment. And of course, there's also supposed to be a no-fly zone, which the OSCE continually monitors, but it's being broken by the Ukrainian government. And of course, the U.S. government is not only heavily backing Ukraine, but also we are building a U.S. military base in Odessa, which, if you're looking, and I'm going to kind of describe some of these things, guys, in details for you, as if you're looking at an overhead map, because we're going to need this anyway for the purpose of dealing with the situation about military movement anyway in just a moment here. But if we're looking at Ukraine from a bird's eye view, the far eastern part of the country is where the war wages on. In an English map, you have Donetsk, Luhansk, and Mariupol is still under the control of Ukraine, but it's also a major port. And the Russian military in Rostov, which is just across the border, and all this is on the Kerch Sea right there. This is where all the contention is right now, is around Mariupol, especially in that area there. And at the same time, while we have the fighting that is going on here, where the Ukrainians have lost 40 soldiers, we realize that in Odessa, which is to the far southwest of Ukraine, which is right there bordering on Moldova on the Black Sea. It is another major port for the Ukrainian military and for the Ukrainian government. And this is where the United States is building a military base. Not looking good for the U.S. to be building a military base there. Now, when we say this, Bonnie, that they're building the base there, and then if you went right to the south of that, to the southeast of Odessa, now we have Sevastopol, Crimea. This is the city in Crimea. This is where Russia has moved a tremendous amount of forces there, which kind of makes me wonder if Russia is not expecting a beach landing or an invasion of Crimea by sea as one way that an attack would come, because Odessa is where we have so much military. Now, you mentioned earlier in the broadcast, Bonnie, about Romania, and this is all playing into this whole region right here. We had seen, thanks to our good friend Lorenzo on Already Happen, he had sent to me privately photographs of the Abram tanks, the H-64 Apache helicopters, the Chinook, 47 of Chinook helicopters, I'm sorry, the CH-47 Chinook helicopters. And these were all being sent to Romania. No one knew time, at least thus far, and I've not been able to figure this out myself yet as well, where is the equipment coming from? The Abram tanks, for example, are on rail cars, but they are being unloaded in Romania. So keep that in mind, being unloaded in Romania. Now, at the same time, he also sent me the images of the Black Hawk helicopters, Apache helicopters, 33 Apache helicopters that were ported in Romania. That was by ship. They were brought in by ship to Romania. So if we go back to our map and we look at what's happening here, if you're ported in Romania, Ukraine and Romania share borders. Now, Moldova has a little small area in between Ukraine and Romania, but Romania on the south side, where it comes to the Black Sea, shares a border with Ukraine, and then on the northern part. But on the Romanian side, if you look at the map where Ukraine comes down to Romania as you follow the Black Sea, that's a very short distance in order to be able to get to Odessa, where we have a U.S. military base. So Could it be that the U.S. do a strike with Ukraine to take back Crimea, which if they were doing so from Romania would be optimal? And you got to keep in mind, there's something, Bonnie, that a lot of people are not thinking about when it comes to Romania. We moved our nuclear bombs to Romania when the alleged Turkish coup took place. If you remember, I brought this out on Israeli News Live, the coup was staged and it was utilized in order for the United States to be able to move nuclear warheads from our base that is in Turkey to Romania. It was a justification. Not only was it to move our military asset into Romania, which were our nuclear warheads, which put us a little bit closer to dealing with the Ukrainian issue, but it's also as a deterrent. If we're going to use Romania as a launching pad for any type of strategic war against Crimea, against Russia in the near future, Romania needs a deterrent from Russia dropping bombs on Romania. So we have nuclear warheads there now. Not only that, the coup was also staged in order to give Turkey the justification to blame it on the Kurds and invade northern Syria so that the U.S. would have the Turkish military on the ground overthrowing Syria and help as part of a coalition of NATO. Even though they have played enemies at times, Turkey is still a NATO ally. And even though Russia plays as if they're being an ally with Turkey, Turkey is still, and we know this from intelligence that was shared with us, Turkey, Erdogan was promised a great deal in a new world order if he would do some of the dirty work, which we know he did because we have the evidence during the crisis in Libya, the CIA used Erdogan to smuggle sarin gas through his country, put into the hand of ISIS, and in 2013 it was detonated on the children of ISIS, the people of ISIS, which included many, many children, and that was identified by Seymour Hersh, American journalist, as well as the MP member of the Turkish parliament, Aaron Erdogan, and also the justice minister of Turkey had presented the evidence that Erdogan was responsible for smuggling the sarin gas into the nation of Syria to be used against the Syrian people. Getting really, really tense. And with the situation now in Romania and all of our U.S. military assets being dropped off in Romania, we can only speculate because the train car brought them in and offloaded them. If they're going to offload them, are they planning on loading them on another train car and taking them to Germany? Possibly. Are they planning on taking them to another part of the theater in Poland or Lithuania, which is not far? Possibly. Or are they planning on using this as they're getting ready to have a confrontation with Russia? So we're looking at hotspots in the world right now. We have now that could be a hotspot with Ukraine because we know there's a justification with the situation in eastern Ukraine with 40 Ukrainian soldiers dying here in the last couple of days or the last week. We might say they've lost 40 soldiers, very unusual number of soldiers to die. That may tell us as well, Bonnie, that Russia has the Wagner group fighting with eastern Ukraine on the ground there in order for them to have such an advantage. Now I have.
What is the Wagner Group?
The Wagner Group is much like our American Blackwater Group, which is a private contracting military fighting machine. Russia took a note from the United States when we used Blackwater inside of Iraq, and they also developed their own private military fighting group where Russia could say that they are not the ones involved in the fighting in other countries, but instead it is the private military force of Russia that does that fighting.
Wagner so, sounds as if they're renting it from Western countries?
Well, no, it's not. And in fact, Wagner, when you mention that, that's why I realized that Wagner, just like in the case of, Russia, just like in the case of other parts of the world, are all very interested in New World Order. And so when we look at the Wagner Group itself, one of the things that makes me think of is that it is a, you know, Wagner is a German surname. Could it actually be? And it's also, I should say this, not should, could it be, but it's also known amongst the Ashkenazi Jewish community to use the name Wagner. So, and of course, it is derived from the German word wagon driver. Which makes you kind of think of the West when we think of the pioneer days, or wagon maker is another name that this is used for. So there is a major uncovering of information that is coming out, and my wife, Yana, is probably one of the leading ones on the research on this, and so many people have taken from her speaking in these conferences on the Noahide laws, the involvement of the Zionist elite, and we must specify, the Zionist elite are not real Jewish people that have returned to the Middle East to see the coming of the Messiah, which our desire is that their eyes will be open to know that Yeshua is indeed that Messiah. But these Zionist elite are those that from even during the times of the Holocaust were willing to sell out their own, our own people, so to speak, the Nazis, in order to gain power over the Middle East. And now that we see what's coming to fruition, Bonnie, it is Jerusalem is going to be the headquarters of the New World Order. And everyone that they say that, you know, for example, when they say that Israel has all these enemies, in many cases, they're allies. You know, China, for example, the West considers China a great threat. Israel, China is an ally. They say Russia is the great threat for Israel and that Russia is the king of the north. Putin and Netanyahu are such close allies that Putin doesn't care if Israel bombs the Iranians completely out of Syria. They're that close working together. Putin is also half Jewish. His mother was a Jew. And this is something that is kept very quiet, but he is Jewish through his mother. He's very close with the Chabad organization. And although I do applaud the fact that he is against anti-Semitism in the nation of Russia, and it's a imprisonable sentence, there should be a freedom of speech to tell the truth of what's really going on when we have evil that is within our own camps. Because Moses faced this in the times of the Exodus. He was constantly dealing with infiltrators because we know the scripture says it was a mixed multitude that came out. Even though they all claimed to be maybe per se Jewish, many of them, we find out later, were traitors and only had the demise of the true word of God at their heart, and was willing to go against Moses and everything that he ever taught our people for the preservation of our people and for us to be able to return to the homeland one day. So I see a cyclical event in what happened then as to now. Even when Joshua went in and we took the homeland and we fought, it was in amongst our own groups. And I forget which tribe it was. It may have been Reuben for all I know. But one of the tribes embraced and made a covenant with the very people that were mixed in with the Nephilim race, made a covenant with them, and then we were not allowed to destroy all these demonic, this demonic entity that had fully embraced the Middle East. So we're seeing a very repeat of that history in modern days today, and the secularism in Israel is an all-time high. My wife sent me an email from 2016, where the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Israeli Minister of Foreign Affairs, Ministry of Foreign Affairs, had organized the largest ever gay celebration in Tel Aviv that the world had ever seen. 180,000 in this gay celebration in the city of Tel Aviv that was organized by the Israeli Interior Ministry with 30,000 people coming in from other countries to celebrate the gay pride celebration there. And I think it's been now 17 years, Bonnie, 17 years that this has been going on in the country, in Jerusalem specifically, where Netanyahu not only has invited them, but they hung the gay pride flag in the Knesset, and they spoke about these events with the flag hanging in the Knesset. No wonder why the book of Revelation says that that great city, which is talking about Jerusalem, and it's still a great city, which is spiritually called Sodom and Egypt. And the reason Egypt is because right there in the Rothschild building, which is I forget which, what they call that building there that has the pyramids on it there in Jerusalem, they have erected an obelisk inside of that. And of course, it is, you know, it's the globalist. It is the elite, not just, and they're not just Jews either. Many of them, I think, like Yeshua said, they are the synagogue of Satan. Yeah, they go to a synagogue, all right, but they're not the true people of Israel. They're not for the true coming of the Messiah, but they will bring about an Antichrist that will be in favor, no doubt, of all these wicked policies that they have embraced, which is only not only demoralizing the nation, but it is also will bring about every disease that you can imagine because of all the promiscuity that's going on.
Is it safe to say that political Zionism is just another arm of the New World Order?
It is. I think it is perfectly safe to say. And, you know, that's why even, Bonnie, when I wrote today to the Knesset, to one of the MK members there at the Knesset, I wrote them personally. And I said, listen, I don't agree with the things that the Likud party is doing. I said, but when it comes to the safety of our people, I care very much about the Israeli people and the safety of our people. And this is why I had to let them know of the intelligence that I was aware of, that Hezbollah may very well have its hands on. And of course, Hezbollah is talking about striking Tel Aviv and Haifa and places like this, you know, but still there are innocent people there. And, you know, and I have to say, Bonnie, I'm not against gay people, but I am against the fact that a government that is supposed to be a government that is claims to be the most religious government that would go by the Torah, as Netanyahu claims, it's not the Torah, it's the Talmud that they're going by, that they this government here that's supposed to be one of the most righteous governments in the world is participating and promoting. I'm not for the bashing of gay people. I'm not for their harm or anything of that nature at all. But I cannot accept or condone a lifestyle that is contrary to the scripture. And I think as believers, we should have freedom of speech to be able to say that. And, you know,
the Talmud isn't opposed to gayness, is it? I mean, the Noahide laws aren't.
I don't recall exactly. I have to go back and research on the Talmud. The Talmud does promote some very hideous things, including the sex of a three-year-old child. You know, it promotes, you know, in other words, if a man were to sleep with a woman that's not his wife, it's not adultery. But if she does, it is adultery. There's all kinds of very bad things that are in the Talmud. It's not, does not even closely resemble the Torah. Not to say that there's not some things in there that you might find that is written in the Talmud that would seem to be an honorable thing to write. Like, for example, when the Talmud gives the seven Noahide laws, it's not in our Bible, and Noah did not have seven laws that he gave to our people. There's no place in the scripture where Noah, he gives one law, and that when he speaks in the beginning, and that was basically do not kill. That's what Noah spoke about, not taking the life of another human being. And other than that, we don't see Noah speaking of any specific laws at that time, other than what we have in Genesis before Noah's time, when we were given simple things. Even the Sabbath is in Genesis.
Yes, right. You know, okay, before we have to leave, we're now at 25 minutes. For 40 Ukrainian soldiers to be killed in eastern Ukraine, does that indicate that either the Russian army or the Russian mercenaries, the Wagner group, is on Ukrainian soil?
I believe there is, in my opinion, because that would take a very more sophisticated ability than what the people have there. Although I've been contacted by the eastern side there, people that live there, that fight there, that watch our program evidently, and they have written me and they have said that this is not true. They said, we are the ones that are fighting our own battle. They said, we do get help from the Russian military as far as financial help and as far as military equipment, but they said they denied that there were Wagner groups involved. Now, that being said, I would say in all fairness to that individual that wrote me this, that, you know, the Wagner group, just like when it comes to the U.S. military, Navy SEALs or the Marines Reconnaissance or the Green Berets, these people fight in behind enemy lines.
Right, they're not really aware they're there.
You wouldn't know they're there if they were.
Well, brother, we have to stop. We're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you, everyone. Until next week. And once again, we do apologize for skipping an installment. So we'll see you next week.
Shalom, shalom, friends.